Well, I have one. I apologize for completely messing up the homework last week. It's called Lack of Awareness While Cutting and Pasting. So what we'll do is there will only be four sets of homework that you need to complete for this course. There's a new one tonight, so don't do that one twice. So I hope you kept up your meditation practice. So, welcome to the fifth of six classes in the Discovering Buddhism module on Mind and Its Potential. Let's see, okay. Do we have anyone who's here for the first time tonight? Okay, glad to have you here. I can't promise that you'll be able to follow everything, but I hope you get some benefit from the class this evening. I'm going to start by reading that quote from Alex Berzin that I gave you last week, and it is on the homework for tonight, so you'll have a copy of it when you leave. And I hope each time you hear it, and as you read it over this week, you are able to cut through the jargon a little bit and see what he's actually saying. Because I really think this sums up this entire six-week module very well. According to the Buddhist definition, mind is mere clarity and awareness. So there are three important words there, mere, clarity, and awareness. And he'll explain what he means by each of those. Mind is mere clarity and awareness, and refers to the individual, subjective mental activity of experiencing things, both objects, physical objects, thoughts, dreams, memories, the individual, subjective mental activity of experiencing things. So going back to those three words, clarity means giving rise to cognitive appearances of things, similar to mental holograms. And awareness refers to cognitively engaging with them. So he's saying these mental holograms arise in the clear space of our mind, and we become aware or engage with them in various ways. Mere implies that this occurs without a separate, unaffected, monolithic me that is either controlling or observing this activity. The I, capital letter I, exists but merely as an imputation based on a continuity of ever-changing moments of experiencing ever-changing things. So what he's saying there is that the mind is a series of ever-changing experiences, and there is nothing more than that. There is no me or I that mind belongs to or controls to. The I is merely imputed onto that ever-changing experience. So I'd like you to read that this week and think about what it means and see if you understand what he's saying, and we'll talk about it. Tonight we're going to finish going through the introductory prayers. If you have the gold prayer book, turn to page 34 and 35. If you have the white book that's in the pocket in the back of the chair in front of you, it should be on the first page. So tonight we're up to the mandala offering. And the mandala offering is, as it says, is an offering. We're offering up to all living beings everything wonderful and blissful and causing happiness that we can imagine. We're mentally offering it up to our teachers, to the Buddhas, and to all sentient beings. And the word mandala refers to a perfect environment. So we're offering up this perfect environment containing everything wonderful that we can imagine. So we're practicing generosity. We're not actually giving things, but we're imagining that we're giving them. And this is based on the Buddhist cosmology. In it, we imagine that Mount Meru, which is the center of the universe, is in the center. And then we imagine the four continents. They said there were four continents at each corner. And the sun and the sun up here, the moon down below. And then we fill in all the space with beautiful jewels and wonderful food and peace and loving family members. And we imagine that we're offering it up to all sentient beings. And we accompany this with a hand mudra, a hand gesture, which is generally a source of great confusion for people when they're introduced to it. But it's not really that hard. Let's see, who here is good at it? Who can do it? Linda, can you do the mudra? Who else can do the mudra? Okay, Julia, I want you all to walk around and help people with it, okay? You have to kind of... Okay, you start by taking your... If I have to describe it, I can't do it. Dun, 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 dun. You take your two ring fingers, put them together, sticking straight up, okay? Your middle fingers are crossed, and then you take your index finger and pull down on the tip of the middle fingers. Then you rub your head and pat your stomach. Then you cross your little fingers also and pull those down with your thumb. So you have two fingers sticking up in the middle, and then everything else is crossed. The middle fingers are crossed and pulled down, and then the little fingers are crossed and pulled down. You got it? Yeah, yeah. Curl your index fingers a little bit more around those and pull them down a little bit more, yeah. And then, so the two ring fingers pointing up are Mount Meru, and then the other four fingers, everything else is the four continents at the corners, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, if you've got it, come out of it and go back into it, okay? That's the hard part, yes. You can't walk around like that for the rest of your life, yes. You have to. And then you dissolve it, and you come in like this and go back to this. Okay. But typically you hold this at your heart, and this is what you're offering. Okay. So the words of the mandala offering, this ground or this earth, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, which means all these wonderful things that we can imagine, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, sun and moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field. I mean, I imagine it as a perfect environment full of nothing but wonderful things, and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. So we're offering this up to everyone. And then you'll also see people who have mandala sets, which are trays sequentially that they pile up and fill with stones and gems and little gadgets and everything and offer that, and then that collapses. So we offer it up and we say the mandala prayer. Then we dissolve it because it's just imagined. It doesn't have any inherent existence. We dissolve it. As we recite the mantra at the end, Idam Guru Ratnam Mandalakam Niryatayami, which just means I offer this mandala. So it's the same thing. And we go back to our hands. Okay? If you can't do the hand mudra, no big deal. You can just imagine that you're doing the hand mudra, okay? And fill it up with all your imaginary offerings. Okay, so let's start with the refuge and bodhicitta prayer, the four immeasurables, the seven limb prayer, and the short mandala offering, and then we'll do our first meditation. So we'll recite refuge and bodhicitta three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge the Dharma and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until the Dharma and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imaginary. All my negative actions accumulate since beginningless time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merit and those of all others to the great enlightenment. So now we make our mandala and offer it. No screams of pain, please. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniryatayami. Okay. So that's a complete set of traditional prayers to begin a meditation session. So now we'll do our first meditation of the evening. Begin by checking your posture. Back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit, but not rigid or tight. Head is straight on your shoulders. Eyes are either lightly closed or slightly open. Mouth is lightly closed. Tongue on the gums above the upper teeth. Shoulders are down and a little bit back, so our chest is open. Upper arms away from our torso. Right hand on left with thumbs touching, slightly below our navel. If we're sitting in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor, or we can place a cushion underneath our feet if we want. If we're sitting on the floor on a cushion, we're seated towards the front third of the cushion so that our pelvis is a little bit tilted forward and open, and our legs are in any position that we find comfortable and stable. The posture is meant to be stable and self-sustaining, so that once we establish it, it doesn't become a distraction during the meditation. And it's also said to open up certain energy channels in the body that would otherwise interfere with our meditation if they were occluded. So take a moment, scan your body, starting at the top of your head, working down, identifying any sources of discomfort or tension, and addressing those now so they don't come up over and over again during the meditation. And we begin our meditation by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting on the out-breath. And we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And then following up on our prayers that we said at the beginning, we take a minute to set our motivation for the meditation that's to follow. And as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, that we're sitting here and doing this simple meditation so that it may make a positive imprint on our mind stream, so that we can be of benefit to all living beings. And it may seem a little bit grandiose, but it said that's the most powerful motivation for our meditation and gives the most energy for what's to follow. So think along those lines for a moment. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation session. We're going to go a little bit longer, about 15 minutes, doing a simple concentration meditation. Because concentration is a skill we need to develop as part of our spiritual path. This is a skill we can bring to everything else that we meditate on, and it doesn't come easily for some of us. So we're simply going to place the mind, the awareness, on the breath, the physical sensation of air moving in and out through our nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. And every time we notice our awareness has moved to another object, as it inevitably will, we set that aside and come back to the breath. Not being harsh with ourselves, not criticizing ourselves, but just setting the other object aside and back to the breath. Over and over, as many times as we need to do that. can end our meditation with a dedication. Acknowledge that our mind has changed, maybe in a very small way, but it's a little different than before we did the meditation. We've created a positive imprint, and may that imprint remain on our mind stream until it ripens in a way that benefits all sentient beings. Any questions or comments about that meditation or anything in the prayers that we read earlier? Okay. So tonight we're going to continue our discussion on minds, I'm going to call it minds and mental factors. Anybody remember what the Tibetan name for this is? No, not Lojong. Not Lomain. Low Rig, yes. Low Rig. Just so you'll be familiar with that term, okay? Minds and mental factors. And all this is a model. You know, it's not ultimate truth. It's a way the Buddha gave us of helping to understand what's going on in this chaos that is our mind of nonstop thoughts and emotions coming and going. You know, you don't have to use this model if you don't find it helpful, he said. Look at it and see if you find it helpful. If you do, study it. If it doesn't seem helpful, just set it aside. I mean, we can just look at our mind and say, oh, they're happy thoughts, they're unhappy thoughts. If that works for us, we can stick with that. But the Buddha gave us this model, which is a little bit more detailed, and there he gave us lots of other models of the mind that become even more detailed. They don't contradict each other, they just go into more detail and become a little bit more refined. So
Lorig is Tibetan, or is that Tibetan?
That's Tibetan, yeah. Yeah, those short, kind of harsh syllables are always Tibetan, yeah. Sanskrit's a little more harmonious sounding. Yeah, Tibetan is very short syllables. So if we're going to talk about this model tonight, kind of race through it because there's a lot to discuss, but it's a way of looking at what's going on in our mind and beginning to understand what's there, because we're not even aware of that what's there most of the time. So he's talking about minds here, not in, and when I'm using that word in this topic, it's not that continuum without beginning and without end that we've talked about, but this is talking about moments of mind, those little things that arise in the clarity of the mind, those mental holograms that Alex talks about in that quote. So we're talking about moments of mind, or moments of consciousness. And how many types of those are there? We talked about this last week. Six, okay. There's six types of moments of mind, and they are accompanied by various mental factors. That's kind of like the seasoning or the flavoring that goes with these minds. And how many mental factors are there in this model? 51, okay. This model comes from a sangha. There are other models that have fewer mental factors. There are others that have more mental factors. But in this model, we're talking about 51 mental factors. So this comes from the Buddha through a Sangha, who is a great teacher. There are six types of primary consciousness. Does anybody remember what those are?
Eye.
Ear.
Smell.
So let's say visual, olfactory, tactile, gustatory or whatever you want to call it, auditory, and mental, okay? The five correspond to the five sense organs, or the five senses as we know them in the West, plus they've added the mental one. And these minds are just direct perception, okay? The mind directly perceives a visual moment of mind or consciousness, directly perceives this little, what would you call it, little hammer or whatever, this little clock. Okay, it's not even labeling it a clock. It's not seeing that it's rectangular. It's not seeing that it's gray and black. It's not seeing that it says 7:41. It's not saying I like this clock or I don't like this clock. It's just direct, non-dualistic perception of a visual phenomena. Okay? There's clock and there's a moment of mind working through the eye. Okay, we're not talking about the eye, the sense organ. We're talking about a mental phenomena that is, as we know, non-physical, direct perception of the clock. That's all. No description. Just direct, undifferentiated perception of clock. Perception of taste. Perception of sound. Perception of smell. Perception of feel. And a mental moment that perceives a thought. That perceives a memory, an idea, a plan, an emotion. Okay? Just direct perception. Undifferentiated perceptions. These are what these moments of mind that he's talking about are. So there are six different types. They arise continuously within this empty space of the mind that we've been talking about. There's a continual arisal of moments of mind that are either based on the five physical senses or perception of the mind itself. Undifferentiated, no characteristics, no qualities, no description, not even putting a name on it, just direct perception of the object. Mind directly perceiving the object. But we all know that's not all there is. We don't go through life with direct perceptions and nothing else. All of these perceptions are accompanied by mental factors. And that's what we're going to spend tonight, going through the mental factors. In different combinations, they are what give the taste, the feeling to that direct perception. So when I look at the cup, there is an instantaneous moment of direct perception, and then all these mental factors that accompany that direct perception come flooding in. And that's where all the stories in our mind come from. It's from the mental factors. It's because we're adding things onto the direct perceptions. Any comments or questions about that? Yeah, let's see. Mike over here. How many people we got watching tonight?
Nine.
Oh, okay. Nine again. We need to grow. Yeah, call someone up. Get someone else to tune in. Yeah.
How fits the intelligence here?
Excuse me?
How fits the intelligence?
How does intelligence fit into this? What do you mean by intelligence? Well, first you have to define intelligence.
Well, the process to understand something, no? Let's see, the sapiens, the Homo sapiens,
mm-hmm.
The intelligence at a certain point in time show up.
Mm-hmm.
How the... this process to think,
mm-hmm.
to make conclusions.
Keep that in mind as we go through the mental factors. I think you'll see parts of what we label as intelligence in the various mental factors, kind of spread out amongst them. Okay? Yeah, good question though.
Would you say that the six minds, and this might be jumping ahead as well into karma, but are dependent on our karma, our direct perceptions?
Yeah, yeah. The fact that I directly perceive that cup before I even add the mental factors, that happens because of karma. Yeah, it's not just random, okay? The fact that I'm that cup is in my life, that I'm perceiving it, that's a result of karma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Is it true that they're always on working simultaneously?
That what
all of these six primary consciousnesses are always active?
No, they're one of the, they come and go. Yeah.
Okay.
It may seem like they're simultaneous. It may seem that we're seeing and smelling something. Oops. Now, how can I make that part of the teaching? I don't know. That we're talking and kicking things at the same time. But actually, the Buddha would say that we're going back and forth between them very quickly.
Oh, okay.
We can only have one primary consciousness at a time, okay? You know, it's impossible to multitask. We can only go back and forth between the two things. It may seem simultaneous just because we're not very aware. Mm. But at a moment, we can't have two primary consciousnesses occurring at the same time. The one what that is strongest?
That you perceive quickly, like so I look at it and I'll see the blue. Someone else will look at it and look at the shape.
That's different karma ripening, yeah. I mean, it's all determined by...
So it's all determined.
Yeah.
The different karma, what we perceive as quickly as possible. I'll look at it as blue, someone else will see it well as big or... This
yeah, yeah. Yeah, an ant would see it as enormous.
Yep.
Because they have the karma of being an ant, yes, okay?
Oh, okay.
They're not going to see it as something to pick up. That it has no...
It's huge,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay? So, we're going to go through the different mental factors. Thank you, Linda. Sorry about that. Okay. The first one are the five, I'm going to call them... These terms get translated so many weird ways, and you're dealing with Tibetan logic, which is a little bit different from Western logic or Tibetan way of thinking. So if you don't understand it perfectly, don't worry. And I don't think you need to memorize this list of 51, but just be familiar with the terms. There are the five, I'm going to call them ever-present mental factors. I'm going to use the abbreviation for MFs, and that stands for mental factors, okay? Doesn't stand for anything else, okay? First one is feeling. The second one is distinguishing. The third one is, I'm going to call this movement. Another word that's used for it is urge. But the fourth one is contact. And the fifth one is I'm going to call it engagement. I'll call it paying attention, okay? These five mental factors accompany every primary consciousness, every primary moment of mind. These five are always there, okay? The first one, feeling, is the object, the cup. It either makes me happy, it makes me unhappy, or it gives me a neutral, or I don't care, okay? One of those feelings accompanies every primary moment of consciousness. There's direct perception, and then immediately afterwards, there's like, don't care. And that's determined by karma, our past karma. Okay? Liking it is said to be a feeling of happiness, which means that we want that feeling to last. Not liking it is unhappiness, saying we want that feeling to go away. Feelings of happiness are caused by past virtuous actions. That's how we define a virtuous action in Buddhism. Yeah, I'll get to you in just a moment. Positive also. But past virtuous actions are those that cause happiness in the future. Non-virtuous actions are those that cause unhappiness. Okay? So this feeling that arises immediately is a result of past actions that are generally either virtuous or non-virtuous. When we either feel happy, we feel unhappy, or we're indifferent. Okay? Indifferent feelings are caused by neutral actions, of which there are very few if we're honest with ourselves. And if we, you know, if we look at our life, we basically go through life saying, I like it, I don't like it, I don't care. Now that's a very simplistic model, but that's what's happening with everything we come into contact with. There's that feeling. Okay? Question over here.
It's a very simple question. The word feeling sometimes refers to emotions, sometimes refers to sensations. Does this encompass both or
this
only emotions?
It refers
emotion.
To a feeling of happiness or unhappiness.
Just those two.
That's all we're talking
Thank
about.
You.
Yeah. Very primitive, primordial sort of feelings. Or I like it, I want more of it, I don't like it, I don't want it. Okay? So this mental factor is always present, but it can be accompanied by one of the later ones, like something like craving. So if we have a feeling of happiness, but it's accompanied by craving, then, you know, that happiness is contaminated. You know, it doesn't keep the mind calm. Or it could be accompanied by a feeling of generosity. So that does calm the mind. So these mental factors are additive. They all add up to the experience of that one primary mind, depending on how they're mixed. But these five are always present. Distinguishing just means simply to say, when I'm looking at the cup, I can see what's cup and what is not cup. Okay, it distinguishes the environment from everything that it isn't. Okay, I see cup and I see not cup. There's that sense that when we're perceiving something directly, it's accompanied by that ability. Movement or urge is the force that during that moment of primary consciousness takes the mind to the object. Okay, this is what Alex is talking about in his quote when he says, awareness refers to cognitively engaging with experiences, okay? Movement is what pulls our mind to the object. The mind then makes contact with the object, and that's where the feeling arises, and the mind is able to stay on that object. I mean, all this is happening instantaneously, but these five factors are always present in the perception of the cup, in the perception of the rug, in the perception of, I have to stop at the store and get some milk on the way home, in the perception of this or that, or whatever is appearing to our mind is always accompanied by these five factors. Any questions? Okay, wait for the mic.
Sorry for the... How play the memory here?
Hmm?
The memory.
Memory is just a mental phenomena, and it's the sixth primary mind. The mental mind perceives a memory. Yeah. A memory, from the Buddhist point of view, a memory is a phenomena just like that cup is a phenomena. They're no different, really. It's something that the mind perceives.
You see, when we see a...
Talking to the mind.
Sorry, when we see a cup,
mm-hmm.
and we distinguish that it's a cup,
mm-hmm.
it's because I have a memory. I saw the cup before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I grab the memory in certain way that...
Well, it's because of karma, actually, but that's similar to what you're talking about, yeah.
So karma is memory?
Not exactly, but a lot of what we consider memory operates under the power of karma. Okay, an ant would not see a cup. An ant would see a huge immovable object that's blocking its path. Okay, because it's seen other huge immovable objects, but that's its karma that determines that appearance. Okay, over here, yeah.
So if I understand correct, so you said the feeling, if it's a, I don't like it, it's because it comes from like previous bad karma.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's say I don't like chocolate ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Should I like normally, if I had a good karma, would like chocolate ice cream? And like, where is that line? Like, would I like
yeah.
chicken ice cream? Like, where is the line? Like, some things are like subjective or objective. And just
yeah, it's just, Yeah, I mean, it's a good example, but it's a silly example in a way, in that that's a very trivial. But if we look at that at some level, if we have a bowl of chocolate ice cream in front of us, and we don't like chocolate ice cream, that is a type of suffering. It's not the greatest suffering in the world. It's very subtle, but it is a type of unhappiness. Our mind is agitated, okay? Negative actions or negative unhappiness agitates our mind. Happiness, true happiness, our mind is calm.
So like a Buddha would normally like all types of food, like no matter what?
It would all be bliss to a Buddha.
Okay.
The Buddha experiences nothing but bliss. Chicken ice cream, yeah.
Says,
bring it on, yes. With chocolate sauce, yes. And yeah, okay. Okay, so these are the five that are always present with every primary moment of consciousness, always accompanied by these. Okay? Yeah.
Sorry, could you please explain contact and paying
yeah,
attention?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to give very brief explanations of some of these. Contact is... We move towards the object, the mind makes contact with the object, okay? And for that infinitesimally small moment of consciousness, the mind stays on the object, okay? But it's so quick, but for the duration of that moment, it stays on the object, okay? This is how we perceive everything, through these five mental factors, according to the Buddha. Okay. Okay, then what are called the five, the next are the five ascertaining. Okay, these are intention, mm-hmm. conviction, mindfulness, let's call this one fixation. And then the last one is discriminating awareness. And these are kind of hard to explain. These are not necessarily present accompanying a moment of consciousness. They can be. These tend to be the ones that are present when we see an object as it really is. These are really kind of wisdom mental factors. These are, I don't know if this is what you were thinking of as intelligence, but this is when we start, when we see things the way they are, okay? I mean, if I was looking at the cup and I just kind of glanced at it out of the corner of my eye and I thought it was a box instead of a cup, okay, that would be a direct perception, but it would be a faulty, it's not a valid direct perception. So accurate moments of consciousness tend to be accompanied by these characteristics of intention, conviction, mindfulness, fixation, discriminating awareness. These are all imply that we're seeing things where things are appearing to us correctly. Intention, I'm not even going to try and explain these because I don't understand them myself what they are. But all I can say is that these are positive qualities. They're about seeing objects the way they really exist, okay? Intention means, I can't explain that. Conviction, it means having a sense that you see it correctly. Mindfulness, fixation, means staying with that correct perception of it, not staying with a mistaken perception. And discriminating awareness means appreciating its qualities, okay? Intention, I'm just going to leave that one blank, okay? I really can't give a good explanation of that one. But these are all involved in seeing things as they exist. And they can be all present, one or two of them can be present, or they can all be absent. Okay? Yeah. The aggregates.
How does skandhas, or does it, relate to mental factors?
That's a different model. That's the model of the way things exist. Okay, by skandhas you're referring to the five aggregates.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We talked before about how we're made up of body and mind. The five aggregates is a way of defining that in a little bit more detail. So it's the body and then four mental aggregates. So this is a more detailed form of what we talk about when we talk about the aggregates. Yeah, that's a different model, but this is a little bit more elaborate one, but it's talking about the same sort of things. Yeah, so there is some similarity. Yeah.
Wouldn't they be the 51 factors that are within mental formation?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a direct correlation, but...
My understanding is that that's where that comes from.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay, so not having explained those well, we'll move on, okay? Yes. Just be aware those are the ones, those are wisdom, okay? Seeing things as they really are. Because we can have moments of consciousness that are mistaken, okay? We don't always see things the way they are, or that are lacking those qualities of wisdom. So the next, now we get to 11. These are the 11 constructive mental factors. These can be present in any combination. These are, when these are present, the mind is calmer. Okay? That's what makes them constructive. The mind is less agitated. Okay? First one is believing in the truth of an object. I'm just going to write these up here. Again, I don't think you need to learn all these. The second four is how our actions... Oops, no. Excuse me, I skipped one. Moral self-dignity, how our actions appear to others. Let's see, detachment. I'm going to call that one non-attachment. Let's see. Imperturbability. Lack of, I'm going to put ignorance. Sometimes I say naivete, lack of naivete. Perseverance. Sense of suppleness. caring attitude, equilibrium, and lack of cruelty. Lack of cruelty. Okay. These are mental factors that, if they accompany the primary mind, tend to calm the mind. First one is believing in the truth of an object. This is when we see something that has good qualities, to believe in the reality of those good qualities. So for a cup, the good qualities are pretty insignificant. But for example, when we have a teacher who we truly see good qualities in, really believing that those are real, that they're not just a myth that surrounds this person, or it's not just things that other people say, or the truth of the value of love and compassion. Okay, believing in the truth of the good qualities of an object. Moral self-dignity refers to having respect for how we act, for our actions of body, speech, and mind. not acting in a way that goes against our moral standards. And then how our actions appear to others, sometimes this is actually referred to as shame, okay? And that's considered a positive quality, not wanting to do things that other people would consider bad. Okay, people that we respect, of course. For example, our teachers. If we're motivated not to act badly in the presence of our teachers, that's considered a positive quality. Okay? It's not if it's done honestly, okay? But these all occur in various degrees. Non-attachment. Okay, it may make us happy to look at our cup, but we don't want to cling to it. We don't want to mix that feeling of happiness with attachment. What's the definition of attachment? Anybody know? It's clinging, but there's a more specific. You know, Linda? Yeah.
Exaggerating the positive qualities.
Exaggerating the good qualities, okay? I like the cup. But the cup isn't going to make me happy for all eternity, okay, no matter how much I like it. Or as Venerable Rabina says, the chocolate cake. Yes, it's a nice chocolate cake. Enjoy it, but it's not the source of permanent happiness. So non-attachment, having feelings of happiness but without being attached. Or when we have dislike, not aggressively pushing it away, that kind of reverse attachment, okay? So that's a positive mental quality. Imperturbability is, this means not wanting to harm anyone, okay? Not wanting to cause harm, okay? Lack of ignorance, that means not thinking that the cup is a box, okay? Not perceiving things incorrectly. Perseverance is, this is similar to what we talk about when we talk about joyful effort. It means rejoicing in virtuous actions. Sense of suppleness is that refers to the mind being flexible enough that it can stay with something positive as long as it wants to. Okay, caring attitude is like compassion, meaning that others not suffer. Equilibrium is the mind staying calm no matter what it encounters, and then not being cruel is not wishing to harm others. So it's caring attitude is really more others being free of suffering, and lack of cruelty is not wanting to harm. Okay, so these are 11 positive mental factors that can occur in any combination. They can all be absent, okay? They don't have to be any of these. But these are the ones, when present, make the mind happy, make the mind calm. Okay? Any questions or comments? Wait for the...
Naivete. Okay. I was looking at that, and I was reading about it, and it said, I don't know where I read it, somewhere, that it's pretension. That, in other words, that it's a bad quality. It seems like naivete is unawareness.
Yeah, naivete. We're talking about lack of naivete. Lack of ignorance, lack of naivete.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, absence of those. And you got to move along to get through all of these. How many have we done so far? 21. Oh, gosh. Faster. Excuse me? Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah. Now the fun ones, yeah, the bad ones. Okay. The 7 deadly sins. The 6 root disturbing mental factors. Again, all can be present, none can be present, any combination of them can be present. These are factors that agitate the mind, okay? Causes us to lose our peace of mind. Okay, desire. Longing, desire, yeah. Okay. Longing. we could call it craving, okay? Anger, the wish to harm. Arrogance. Okay, or pride. Ignorance. Wavering or doubt. Wavering. And six, delusion. Okay, these are all pretty self-explanatory. These agitate the mind. They make the mind disturbed. Desire, longing, you know, that craving, grasping quality. Anger, the wish to harm others. Arrogance or pride. Ignorance refers to not seeing reality as it is. Doubt is questioning what we think is true. And then delusion is, again, a variance of ignorance, seeing things that not as they really are. Okay, these are all disturbing mental factors. They can all be present, none be present. They can be present with the positive ones. So, you know, lots of times our experiences are quite mixed. You know, if we sit down and look at them, there's some good and some bad mixed in. That's a mixture of different mental factors that are occurring. We can have, caring, but it can be mixed with longing. You know, love can be mixed with craving. They can be mixed up in any possible combination. But these are the six root ones. Sometimes you'll hear the root delusions referred to as anger, hatred, and ignorance. Okay, this is just another way of saying the same thing in a little bit more, breaking it down a little bit more. And if we look at our mind, you know, we're going to see that probably one of those three is the strongest one for each of us based on our karma. We'll have different mixtures of those delusions in our mind stream. Okay. Any questions or comments there? Okay. Okay. What's the count now? Let's see, 16 plus 11, 27, is that what we're up? We've done 27? Yeah. Okay, so now we have, this doesn't seem fair, there's so many more negative ones than positive ones. Now we have the 20 auxiliary disturbing mental factors, okay, ones that agitate the mind. All can be present, none, or any combination thereof, and they can be mixed with all the others. Okay, and this, some of this hatred, let's see, resentment. Okay, raise your hands if you experience any of these, yeah. Concealment of bad actions. So acting good because we want to make a, because we're concerned about what our teachers may think is a positive mental factor, but doing something bad and then trying to hide it from our teachers is considered a negative, okay, a disturbing mental factor. Outrage. This particularly refers to harsh speech. Envy. Miserliness. Pretension. Uh, hypocrisy. Let's see, conceit. It's kind of painful, isn't it? Yeah. Cruelty, another cruelty. Lack of moral self-dignity, a lack of personal standards. Not caring what others think of our actions. Not having a positive sense of shame. Not caring what others think of our actions. Foggy-mindedness. Flightiness of mind. Mind that just jumps around, can't concentrate. Disbelieving a fact. Disbelieving what is true. You can see how some of these come from ignorance, some come from anger, some come from desire or attachment. Laziness. Carelessness. Or let's say recklessness, that's better, I think. Recklessness. Forgetfulness. Lack of alertness. And mental wandering. Pretty grim list, isn't it? Any comments? I mean, most of them are self-explanatory. I'm not going to go through these one by one.
What does number 13 say?
13 says foggy-mindedness, okay? Lack of clarity in our thinking. Is that the... Yeah. Is it like doggy-mindedness? Okay, let's see. Linda, we've got another hand up over here.
I was just going to ask, what would be the difference between 14 and 20? Flightiness of mind?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was wondering that. Let's see. Flightiness refers to just jumping from object to object. Mental wandering means when, for example, when we're meditating on our breath, means our mind is going away from the breath, okay? It's going away from the object. Awareness is what brings us back to the object. We realize we're off it and come back to it. Okay, so they're similar. Those would both fall under the category of ignorance. Okay, you can put each one of these as primarily from one of the three root delusions: anger, attachment, ignorance, or from a combination of them. Okay? They can be present in any combination, and they can be mixed in with the positive mental factors. But this is what gives us, these are the things that flavor our experience of objects. There's that direct perception, and then all of this in a gazillion different combinations gets laid on top of it. And that's where all the drama in our life comes from. Oh. Okay. Let's see. And then the last category, because that was 47, so now we have four changeable mental factors. They're called changeable because these can either calm the mind or agitate the mind. The others up to this point have either agitated the mind or calmed it. Okay, so they're they can be positive or negative. First one, I'll just go right on out here, sleepiness or sleep, okay, or sleepiness, okay. Regret. Regret can be positive. It keeps us from doing negative things, but it can be overwhelming. It can be disturbing. Let's see. Detection means finding mistakes in things, finding gross errors, and then there's subtle discernment, which is looking at the details of something. And sometimes if an object is important, if we study it and get all the details, that can be a very positive experience. But sometimes if we get hung up in the details and can't see the big picture, it can be upsetting. Same thing about detection, looking for faults. If we're analyzing something, to truly see major faults for a valid reason, then that can be a positive quality. But if we're constantly looking for faults in everything, that can be a negative quality. So these are variable. Okay? Sleep, I'm not sure. Sleep, it can be, you know, sleepiness because we need to rest, I guess. I guess that's how it's positive. But it can't, you know, drowsiness is not necessarily positive. Okay? Yeah. But, okay. Okay, so we made it through all 51. Congratulations. We got a couple minutes to spare. Again, I don't think there's much, I mean, there's certainly no reason not to memorize this. I don't think you need to get the value from this. This is a way of analyzing the contents of your own mind and beginning to look for patterns. And this is something that you would discuss with a teacher. You say, you know, I notice this is coming up over and over in my mind. I don't seem to have any control over it. What practices can I do to help with that? And this is where the teacher may give you a specific practice to help with. If you see this coming up over and over, this is a pattern. So it's a way of a model that we can use to analyze the content of our mind. Okay, with the understanding that none of this is the essential quality of the mind. This is just what's happening there. So it all can be changed. It can be purified. And ultimately, the qualities we find that don't make us happy can be eliminated completely, according to the Buddha. Okay? Any comments before we finish up? No time for any more meditation. Yeah. So there is homework to do. But I'd like you to read Alex's quote every day and make sure you understand what he's saying there, because that sums up the whole class. And I ask people to come with a specific question for discussion next week. Think long and hard about that and be very clear and specific about what your question is, and then we'll throw a few of those out to the group and talk to them about it. And, yeah, next week's our last week. Yeah, it's been going by fast. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Mm-hmm.